Welcome to Bill Cotman to talk about.
I have a path planned through some parts of the book, but it is not important to me to make my way through that path. I would like to engage in conversation with you as I go along the path. So I'm going to encourage conversation all the way along, so to speak. And I've made myself some notes to help myself stay on my own path. So in January 2004, I was in Salisbury, Maryland, preparing my mother's funeral service, and I kept remembering her saying, "My life ain't been no crystal stair." And that sounded like poetry to me, but I knew that my mother wasn't a poet. So I sent an email to Julie, I sent it to Jay Otis, and I sent it to George, and I asked them if they knew if this was a line in a poem. And each one of them responded to me within less than an hour. Langston Hughes, mother to son. "Well, son, I'll tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters and boards torn up and places with no carpet on the floor, bare. But all the time, I've been a-climbing on and reaching landings and turning corners and sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So, boy, don't you turn back. Don't you sit down on the steps because you find it's kind of hard. Don't you fall now, because I'm still going, honey. I'm still climbing, and life for me ain't been no crystal stair." So George and Jay Otis and Julie have special places in my kind of moving forward here with what I'm doing. I want to start with, within 1 year's span, both of us lost our mothers, found ourselves adults. And there's a book kind of floating around and stuff, you can kind of get a clue in it. But within 1 year's span, both of us lost our mothers and found ourselves adults. And the photographs that appear there have to do with my mother's resting place and Beverly's mother's resting place. And this is my first pause point. I may have said enough already that there's a question or comment or something out there already, and I'd like to let them pop up as they happen. So if there is, all right.
Because I've always wondered this, actually. When you said that you had three people pass in your life quickly, I mean, in around the same time.
Two.
Did you then go back and look for old photographs? How did you kind of deal with this in terms of your own art? Mm-hmm. How did you just start taking pictures and pulling them out, and or
no? In the year 2000, I had an exhibition here called "Looking Backward, Moving Forward," and I look backward over about, at that time, 30 years of contact sheets, looking for primary visual themes because I had the time now, and so I wanted work going forward that had some real validity to it, something from my own story. So in 2000, I did that, and I had an exhibition here. There were 70 photographs in it. But at that time, I didn't really recognize what I had seen. It wasn't until 2003, during my McKnight Photography Fellowship year that I recognized what I had seen, and I had seen the recurrence of the stories from the lives of four women, my mother, my mother-in-law, my wife, and my daughter. So from 2003 forward, my visual themes have been oriented around the influences of those four women on my life. So four women's stories is going forward. So the writing, and it's interesting now, it only takes one question to destroy the path or to create. No, don't do that. That was a bad choice of words on my part. To create a richer path. To create a richer path. That's good because that takes me to this one. There are four of them still shaping me to see new social landscapes. Evelyn, born in Delmar, Maryland in 1908, a year before they started issuing birth certificates. Across regions of Evelyn's laugh lines and frown lines and pensive lines of thought is a chronicle of a schizophrenic century. Beverly, born in Berkeley, grew up in Kansas City and married me in Washington, D.C. The entire room lives somewhere in the reflection that she would never see except for a photograph which captured the backward glance. Patricia, absorbed jazz in Kansas City, moved to Washington, D.C., always wanted to live in San Francisco. None of us know when the lights in our eyes will dim. We meander through our lives with more questions than answers, more confusion than clarity, and more doubts about our future. Kenna, all I ever really wanted you to be is responsible. You are your grandmother's, your mother, and your daughter already. The world doesn't know you, but you have known the world from the inside already, like a sleeper knows dreams. Now, those words are from my dear friend J. Otis Powell and from our collaboration in 2003 around the four women and those stories. And many things are interesting about that collaboration, but the thing that's most interesting about it is how it was the beginning of my learning what real collaboration was. Because I went to J. Otis with, here's what I'm doing, and here's what I want, and J. Otis said, that's not what I do. And so I said, well, I thought I understood. And he said, I'm a writer. I'm this and I'm that, and I write. And we talked and we talked. And it became clear to me that there were possibilities for us to create simultaneously and for our paths to parallel, to converge and to diverge and still be dealing with the same thing. So this idea of freedom, identity, and responsibility were themes that came back to me from J. Otis from looking at photographs. All of this is kind of, I hope, around a way of getting to how this is sort of coming together. Because the other thing that you folks need to know is that this was not intended to be a book. This is intended to be a performance. And it's intended to be a performance of stories from the past, allusions to the present, and disturbances forming the future. And it's a performance for the Ways Ensemble, which is what Beverly and Kenna and I call ourselves when we perform together. Beverly tells stories, I project images, and Kenna dances. And we weave these stories together that way. So I'm preparing content for the performance of Surface Tensions. And let's see. Let me see. Let me go back to this one. Okay. Novelist Richard Wright died in Paris in 1960, and his remains are in Père Lachaise Cemetery. We were in Paris in June 2008 and stumbled upon a celebration of the 100th anniversary of his birth in 1908, which is the same year my mother was born. And there, I learned that he wrote poetry in this haiku form that I really didn't know anything about and everything. But I bought a copy of his book called Haiku, This Other World. And the precision of that writing style appealed to the engineer in me. But the theme of nature didn't appeal to anything in me. So that's why I don't call my writing form haiku. I simply call them seventeens, the sum of the syllables of the words in three lines. I call them seventeens. And fairly recently, doing some other reading, I came across some information that I learned that there is another form of Japanese poetry writing called senrai, which has everything that haiku has in form, but is about everything and not about nature. So I took that finding to my ace number one sounding board, and I said, look what I found. I found a validation. And he said, you don't need a validation. So.
I have a request.
A request.
When you read stuff from the book, would you reference the page? So I don't have to wait until the end of your comment to find it.
Only a person who has a book in his hand could ask a question like that. Few of us do? Oh, I'm sorry. Pay attention. Okay, page 46. See things as they are, not because of names attached to narrow meanings. And I'll describe the photograph. It's a photograph of a street scene. And Beverly's face is on the left side of the frame, and she's kind of looking out the bus window, and there's a sign out there, and it says Black and White Center. And it's a cosmetic shop, is all it is. So see things as they are, not because of names attached to narrow meanings. How photographs come to be with particular 17s is somewhat of a mystery to me and somewhat of a result of when I do it, when I've done it. I've been writing these since 2008. And I would venture to say that everyone in this room who is on email has gotten one. Or two, or more. They come. And early on, Julie, like, and I have them all. Julie began responding immediately with her own 17. Well, yeah, because they weren't about nature. They were kind of about what we were doing, our grandchildren, our this, our life, and everything, back and forth. So I have all these. And that was one path that I was planning to talk about today. But that path's at home. So 2008, I started writing. And like I said, it wasn't intended to be a book. It was intended to be a performance. And the timeline getting to the performance said that in June of 2011, I wanted to pause the writing and put what I had written together in some kind of a bound thing. So when I started working with Beverly and Kenna and whoever else is going to be in the piece, that I'd have the contents of things, and we'd start structuring these scenes for surface tensions. I can't really nail for you how it gets to be here, other than I know one thing that happened, and you, Julie, started talking to me about this talk about. Why don't you come to talk about and talk about your book? And I said, what book? There's no book. And she said, well, you know, what you're doing and everything, come talk about it. And so anyway, there's a book now. But it wasn't intended to be a book. And it doesn't stop there, because I'm still writing, and the performance will be whenever it happens. the level of performance that I want to do, what I've envisioned, what I've mapped out so far, and how I want to do this with multiple projection and whatever, is more than I can afford to self-finance. So I'm going to weave a way through something in order for that to happen. So what'll probably really happen is that there will be small performances of scenes from Surface Tensions or something like that. I'm in the mode now where I'm trying to go through some of these and create what I call very short films. So I'm making films with the idea that from the films may come actions for the scenes. So I don't know. Maybe it'll be a movie. I don't know. I don't know. Let's see. Somebody say something. I'll say this. Surface Tensions. I told you all about it's not supposed to be a book, performance, blah, 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 all that. Surface tension, the word surface tension, is the physical property of the surface of a liquid that allows a non-buoyant object to float if you place it on the surface very carefully. Example? You can float a needle on the surface of water in a glass if you place it carefully on the surface and you don't break the surface of the glass. Because the, I'm not sure of this word, if it's molecules or atoms or whatever, are working very hard to stay together, to keep themselves together, much in the same way that we work very hard to keep all the disturbances that are outside of us and the disturbances that are inside us at bay, right at this surface. You know, he's getting under my skin, you know. This guy had a bunch of these. Keeping a straight face. Putting the best foot forward. Laughing to keep from crying. Those are surface tensions. And so this physical property of the liquid is something I've taken on as a descriptor for how at least I'm attempting to move through life. I refuse to let everything in. And I refuse to let everything out. So there's a vibration right at the surface.
Why would you want to go through that? Would you want to go through life relaxed? Why would I have to take a needle and be very intimate in the cabin?
That is... can you say it louder, Bill?
Oh, wow.
You can't?
I was asking Bill... but why would I want to go through that life when I want to be relaxed? Why do I need to put the needle down on the water, so to speak, very carefully, so that you know I won't break the slip?
Well, okay. I mean, it's interesting. It's interesting. The concept of it's not a concept. The property of surface tension is something that somewhat defies logic. Okay? You say, well, this object, because of its physical properties, is not supposed to float. But when it's introduced carefully on the surface of this liquid that is working very hard without thinking of staying together, it will support that foreign object. It will keep it out. Okay? So I don't propose that I am under tension that is stress-inducing to keep things out. I'm simply remaining aware that there are things outside me and things inside me that need to stay separate. And if they get together, they might change the color of everything. Or they might.
Okay, so all you have to do is just hit the glass then.
change. Okay. Stop talking about doing. You don't have to do anything. All you have is to be. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Jay Otis?
One of the reasons I'm here today is to congratulate Bill on what he's done, not just the accomplishment of the physical thing we have in our hand, but his surface tension metaphor is not a prescription. But early in the book, he talks about wanting to be an artist from early in his life. And I think that what he has accomplished is to be an artist who puts images and metaphors in the world that are not prescriptive, but are just there for us to respond to in a way that is not telling us to do anything, but giving us something to contemplate. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And on page 68, I'm playing myself. Husband, father, grandfather, someone call me son. So, I mean, there's action there, there's being there, and there is a desire for something there. I'm playing myself. Husband, father, grandfather, someone call me son. I lost my dad when I was 12, so that's the simple answer to where does that come from? Where's that going? Come on, y'all. I know everybody in this room. And
Bill, as a young adolescent, losing your father at the age of 12, how did that make you feel? As an adult, how do you find that expressing itself in your heart, in your work?
I'm not sure that it does, Deborah. I didn't know my dad that well. My mom and dad had one of those relationships where dad's mom lived across town, and my mom and dad would have a great week right up until Friday, and something would happen, and dad would go to his mother's for 3 or 4 days, and then next week they'd start over again. And, you know, I remember things like that. I mean, I remember things that I, you know, smile and joke about now. There are things that I don't do in my life that I suspect I may have done if there was a male going up. I mean, I'm not an outdoors person. I'm not a you know, hunter, fisher person, those kinds of things. And Dolores, you're looking at me like those are kind of real stereotypical kind of thing. But I'm old school, so. So, like, the dads took you hunting, and the mothers took you cooking, and the... Maury?
I want to go back. If you can backtrack on your path, and if you want to, that's fine. I want to know a little bit more about your collaboration with Jay Otis, because you said kind of what it wasn't. It wasn't you dictating to him. It was you're doing things together, but what was next?
What was
it? That is, okay, so you had a theme, you did something, Jay's did something.
Okay, the development of that, I mean, I had photographs. I had tons and tons and tons of photographs, and I wanted Jay Otis to, because all the women were living at that time, I wanted Jay Otis to interview them. He already knew Patricia. He only knew of Evelyn through my conversations. He knew Beverly, and he knew Kenna. But I wanted him to begin having this series of in-depth conversations with them, and then to write something, a lot of words. You know, I had envisioned, you know, just a lot of words. And this is really difficult to read because the text is small. But he didn't do any of that. He continued writing what he was writing about at that point in time: freedom, identity, and responsibility. And he found my women in those stories, or my women found themselves in those stories. And then I found some of myself in those stories. And there were something like, I don't know, 44, I think it was 44 panels of multiple photographs and texts. There was an exhibition here and at the Catherine E. Nash Gallery at the same time. And I tell you, this is what I envision surface tensions looking like. Getting all the text together, going to Kinko's, getting a little tab binding, and then moving on to the next thing. That was it. But this is what we did for four women: stories of freedom, identity, and responsibility. And you know, the layouts are there, and the text is there, but the text is very small because I didn't know then what I know now. Sure. Deja. Okay, all right. How does my role as a grandfather inform surface tensions? Okay, when I said to you that Beverly is a storyteller and she will represent stories in the performance, that's the past. And I'm the photographer, and I'm representing the present, and I'm doing something that I call allusions to the present. And then there are disturbances. And Kenna represents the disturbances, and that's exactly the reaction I get every time I say that. So Kenna, my daughter, and my grandchildren are the disturbances, and I'm purposefully using a very provocative word because how they are living their lives is disturbing my present. And I don't mean it in any value sense at all. I just mean it in a factual sense. It's disturbing my present. It isn't making me worse or better or anything. It's just disturbing. It's disturbing.
The needle is breaking the surface of the water.
One of the needles is getting through. So Yancy and Ibrahima, they're a part of, you know, they're a part of all of that. And you lead me to another thing that I wanted to do. Thanks for that question. Because January 18th, this is an email exchange, you and I. Okay. Let's see. Something Julie wrote today. And I responded and I said, "You did not make me annoyed by your suggestion." Your comment, this was her comment, "It's a litany of two lies which reads beautifully." Okay, and then I say to her, "Today I'm planning to print out my first pass at reordering everything into stories from the past, allusions to the present, and disturbances form the future." Notice the use of two words, allusions and form. I've decided on allusions instead of illusions because its meaning is how I'm intending to deal with the present. These are casual references and incidental mentions of the present. I do not intend to deceive. The engineer in me is fascinated with technology's ability to deceive, which is illusion, but the artist must prevail, illusion. And the form, F-O-R-M, instead of from, F-R-O-M, developed after lots of mental struggle between the artist and the engineer again. The engineer wants to employ electronic feedback of performance and sounds and movements to disturb the course of the story being told. With Kenna being the disturbance and the word's meaning, I was disturbed by the message of turmoil in her life having a debilitating impact on me. So two nights ago, I misspelled from and I wrote form instead, And when Beverly read it out loud, she read, "Disturbances form the future. I heard what I needed to say. Kenna's life, disturbances to me, is forming her future, not mine." So just that happened there. And then, Julie, as this work developed, I've always had three lives in mind, Beverly's, Kenna's, and mine. So when you said the litany of two lives, I don't know where that went. Okay. Thanks, Deja. Okay. Let's see. More? Let's see. Page eight. Okay. Careful when you tell yourself a story that you tell yourself the truth. And there's a photograph of a painting of a scene of, I don't know if it's Columbus or not, but some of his guys landing, and the native people come out to greet them and offer fruit, and one of his guys is reaching for his sword already, you know, and everything. Of course. It's the dice and slice the pineapple forever and ever and ever and ever. We're still dicing and slicing the pineapple. Yes. Page 96. Things I think I know, resurfacing to question things I thought I knew. So, yeah, I mean, anybody who has taken the time to inhale and exhale and kind of reflect has. There are those of us who don't take that kind of time. So, page 64. This is what it is. Here is where I was going. Now is the right time. It might be a cop-out. That might be a way of claiming whatever is okay or whatever, but...
Bill, I'd like to ask you a question. And that is, I've been lucky enough to receive most, if not all, of your 17s over the last 3 years. So the process of learning to write, the process of discovering what Wright was doing and then working in that form and trying you've been a photographer for 4 years and immersing yourself in that aesthetic as you push yourself into another field, and I wonder if there are parallels with your photography or different kinds of discoveries.
There are parallels, and then there are some different kinds of discoveries. The parallel is that these feel a lot more like photograph titles than they do to poems or something. And for the longest time, I didn't particularly like titling my photographs because that got into that thing about naming something and nailing it down to something. So on one hand, they feel a lot like photograph titles. On another hand, they stand alone because they are actually created separate from the photographs. I can't really think of a time where I've looked at photographs and decided I'm going to write. It's been the other way around. And I go around, I have three small moleskins, the small ones that you can put in your pocket. And one is a book of fives, and the other is a book of sevens, and the other is a book of, I don't know, work, things that I'm trying to put together. But the book of fives is simply five-syllable phrases. Just phrases, five-syllable phrases. So I'm constantly harvesting fives, and I'm constantly harvesting sevens. And sometimes they come from influence of current events. I mean, you know, you open up the New York Times and there's something and you go, and that's a five or that's a seven. There's a seven that's floating around looking for two fives right now. Julie, J. Otis, and George. Julie, J. Otis, and George? That was a seven one day. How was that? Is it? Yeah. Julie, J. Otis, and George is a seven. So there are two fives somewhere that will make that into a 17, and it just hasn't happened yet. I wanted it to happen by today, but it didn't happen.
Be careful, it might happen without you.
Yeah, it might. Yeah, so the writing there's a very mechanical, engineer-like part of that process, fives, sevens, 17s, you count them out, ding, 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 okay? I even, at one point, I said, okay, I'll just build a couple spreadsheets, and I'll do the fives, you know, and I'll do the sevens, you know, and then I'll just write some kind of algorithm or something and then mush them together, and thank God that didn't take wing, whatever. But again, the precision of the writing style, the demand for clarity, I mean, to get a thought into 17 syllables is I find that fun. I'm to be seen places, just kind of doing things. Well, J. Otis has been a big influence on me and words. And I enjoy listening to J. Otis read his work, perform his work, talk about his work, the way J. Otis uses language. There is a precision with which he uses language. At the same time, kind of probing the less thought of definition of a word and bringing it right up in your face is an interesting kind of thing. I don't read as much as I should. I don't read as much as I would like to. I have a stack of things that I want to read. But I find this activity, I find it exciting because I look up the definitions of words, and I learn things that way. I'm looking for, I have an idea that I want to put out, and I don't want to use the word that comes to my mind all the time, so I go to thesaurus, and engineers don't use thesaurus. I need a thesaurus for it. So it feeds this kind of this dual personality that I have. I mean, I want very much to be an artist, and I have lived a life as an engineer, and I like the creative tension between the two. Stan?
I have a lot of hard time trying to understand this. I have three copies at home of a book that I don't use very often called Roger's Thesaurus. And I'm wondering if this kind of way of dealing with words is actually negative in your process, or if it's useful, or if this doesn't count.
Well, when I think about it too much, it's totally unuseful and troublesome and a pain. If I just be with it, Bill, if I just be with it and not do it, then some things happen. Look at page 123. Look at page 123. Narrowing the gaps between what I want and what I know is needed. Narrowing the gaps between what I want and what I know is needed. And I mean, that's just an expansion of this whole, the whole idea that all of us in this room are living, you know, far beyond our needs. You know, we're out in want land, and I'm not beating on you. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. Narrowing the gaps between what I want and what I know is needed. And the image is the back of a truck. Well, it's a taxi. It's a taxi. And the words on the back of the taxi say, "Father, thy will be done." But the way the door opens and breaks the phrase, you get fat. Thy will. You know, and that's somewhere out there or whatever. So we get, you know, okay. All right.
And you've got the Nike.
Say again?
And you've got the Nike as the want.
The Nike as the want. That whoosh, that swoosh. Okay. Page 127. When your path's in front, you are following someone. Your path's behind you. When the path's in front, you are following someone. Your path behind you. Now this photograph, this is Sedona, Arizona, 1994, and this is walking on a little bridge across a little stream. And Deja, I think I've told you this story. I was depressed. I was depressed to the point of having medication, and I was in Arizona, and I was walking across this little bridge. And I felt really good. And I looked down and I said, "I'm not depressed. I'm not going to be depressed anymore." And I made this photograph as a reminder, as a marker for that. And I make lots of photographs of my feet now. And stuff. Yeah.
Together.
Yeah. The way this came together was that there were three buckets. There was a bucket of stories from the past, there was a bucket of allusions to the present, and there was a bucket of disturbances forming the future. And I went back and I looked at the writing until something said, "I belong in this bucket." Something said, I belong here. So then I whooshed them all out. Okay? And then in January and February, I spent a lot of time looking at about 50 to 55,000 files. And as I looked, it was like if it spoke to one of those three buckets, that's where it went without a whole lot of thought. That's where it went. So at the end of those 2 months, I had three buckets of 17s and I had three buckets of image files, but they were not paired with each other. And I was trying to figure out, well, how am I going to do that? How am I going to do that? Because this thing is getting too, it's too big. It's too big. How am I going to? So I gave myself a measured period of time. And that's when I said by June of 2011, which is right now, I'm going to have an assortment of pairings of 17s and images. And what I quickly found out was that it wasn't like there was one image. There were arrangements of images and things. And some things were obvious, some things are forced. There's some forced things in here. And every time I see them, I go like, ah, ah, it still doesn't work. Yeah. So, yeah. Go to page 99. Turning it this way, my other cheek is ego, wiser from bruisings. The whole idea of turning the other cheek and hit on both sides and whatever, and that's supposed to be a learning experience. And so claim it. Claim it. And this photograph, there are all levels of knowing me in this room. And some of you know this photograph. Are you able to know this photograph better than others? And that's another thing, how much prior knowledge plays into how meaningful or not something is to you. My daughter, granddaughter, and her husband. Right on the next page, page 98, on the other side there, how am I to know the future's present value of today's actions? How am I to know the future's present value of today's action? So, you know, you say, should I, you know, putting that best foot forward, is it the best foot? Is it, oh, and it's got like, oh, I'm falling, so I gotta put it down somewhere. So you put it down and it's like, was that the right place? Well, I'll know tomorrow. Or not. How are we doing? Let's see. Okay, page 125 is it's a black page. You can't see the number. Seeing my future through eyes 66 years old, remembering where lies the center of my joy. Troubled, not distressed, perplexed, but not in despair or near destruction. So there's another one without page. Page 114, no, 116 or 17. It's this blue page. Does God bless the child who's getting her own, or only them that's got? Page 113. Ooh, and all you have to do is say their name and they show up. Show up. See, that's how that's all you gotta do. Say their name, they show up. Yeah. Okay. All right, okay. Page 113. And waiting for her mom to say, "I cannot do this alone without you." Postures of distress for ever a grown woman. Let me tell you something that's happening on this page with just page layout. I made a decision ahead of time about some page layout kind of things, and so there are pages that actually have 2 17s on them. There are a couple things here that are really not total 17s, but that's okay. So there are some pages that actually have 2 17s on them. And the more I kind of look at that, some of them work, some of them fight each other, some of them, and I'm not sure about some of them. These two here were not intended to be together, you know, so why'd you put them on the same page then? Well, after a while, you get tired, you know, you're laying this thing out, and put them on the same page. But anyway, that was supposed to be an admission of something. You were supposed to say, "Oh, that's okay." What? Okay. Once it's out, you can't get it back. So you just keep going forward. But waiting for her mom to say, "I cannot do this alone without you." And I'm quoting Kenna. And there's another quoting of Kenna in here that's the Yo Dad. That's that is page 80. Because Leah is here. Stop! Don't tell that story. Page 80. Leah's here. Yo Dad from Kenna. Thinking about the same stuff, wanting to be gone, without worry of leaving you unprotected. I know it's precarious, this wanting to be. Mm-hmm. I flip that one out, and like, usually it's a couple days before I hear anything from Leah. But like, it was like, boom, Leah was right back to me, like, "What's going on?" Yeah, that's us in her glasses. Oh. Reflected in the glasses. There are, well, the title, sort of the title pages, the stories title page, which is about page 7, and then the disturbances title page, which is 78. And illusions, where's illusions? The illusions page is 41. And those are images of the street that I grew up on. And I can stay right at this one to make the point. And I grew up in Salisbury, Maryland, at 614 Edison Street. And, oh, that begs another story. I got to tell that story. My mother lived all her life at 614 Edison Street in Salisbury, Maryland, almost all her life. She moved to William Street, and then she moved to 1514. And then my mother spent the last days of her life in room 614 of the Genesis Care Center. But 614, this was my street. This was my world, from this corner to that corner. And that little stone right there, that's where John Henry's house was. That's all that's left of John Henry's house. There's no evidence of the other houses that were on the block there.
Is that stone like a monument? Or, I mean, is it labeled John Henry's house?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. No, that's just the step. That's just the front step. Yeah.
That's just what's left.
That's just the front step. The front step. Yeah, and the street is blocked off now. It's now a parking lot for the church at the corner. Yeah, it's 30 miles in from the ocean and about 90 miles from Baltimore. on the Delmarva Peninsula. Salisbury, Maryland is the largest city on the eastern shore south of Wilmington on the Delmarva Peninsula. We had a whole thing about that. Page 86. That's that one. A black urgency, an opaque tension lingers to be called by name. This photograph was made on the other side of the ocean. This photograph was made on the African continent. So I like to think that that arm is gesturing toward here. Somebody say something. Somebody say something.
Is there anything else about the eastern shore of the Chesapeake Bay, which, at least in my growing up in the late 40s and 50s, was very isolated until the Bay Bridge was built? Is there anything else about the eastern shore other than the fact that was where you lived that influences?
Page 18. Page 18. We will hold your job shining white men's shoes for us as a college grad.
There were a lot of demonstrations on the eastern shore in the early to mid-60s.
They didn't get further east than Cambridge.
Cambridge.
When I was at Howard, Stokely Carmichael, H.R.A.P. Brown were. I didn't know that. I didn't know that.
Bill and I were cross paths spiritually in D.C. in the 1960s.
What about Stokely Carmichael?
What about him?
Yeah, you called his name in relationship to question.
He was a student at Howard University at the same time I was. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he was Stokely Carmichael then.
Yeah.
And Rap Brown. No, there was another guy, Cleveland Sellers. His name is not, maybe it's Cleveland Sellers, but Cleve had a beard. And Thursdays was ROTC day. And you'd go out and we'd have to march around and do stuff like that. And every Thursday, Cleve would tape up his chin rather than shave his beard. And he'd be out there with all this tape and everything rather than. But
it would.
Well, yeah, when he. Okay. Page 65. All right. Today I live in reflections from many scenes and yesterday's dreams. Okay, 60, yeah. That's Richard and Bill and Tommy. Now today, Tommy is Tom. He's no longer Tommy. And Richard is no longer living. Richard took his life some years ago. And it was another opportunity for J. Otis and I to intersect because J. Otis's physician, Jeevan, but that wasn't it. There was another.
It was George.
George. That was George. It was George. It was George. And there's a piece that we have performed together, and that is on our DVD about slow dancing in blue lights. To Richard, George, and Jeevan. Yeah. But we, from seventh grade, we all met in seventh grade. And then throughout high school and whatever, we were like buddies. And Richard is
the larger.
Yes. And he is the figure on that collage holding Kenna, that one with all the eyes. There's a figure in there that's holding a baby. And so that would put him on the cover. Yeah. That's. Yeah. Yeah. Let's try. Okay, 30.
I just have a quick question. Mm-hmm. When you thought of this was going to be a performance,
you said,
did you think then you would be adding music to it at all?
Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Because, yes. 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 The way Kenna explores her culture and her being, herself, is musical and movement based. So the music would come along with Kenna, and it would be highly rhythmic, beyond that. But it isn't what you might think. It isn't like jazz per se, that kind of thing. It's a little more fundamental rhythms. But I'm not very far along in thinking, in planning the performance, mm-hmm. kind of. I've got this, and that's why I say I'm thinking about these very short films now, because I'll be forcing myself to have some kind of soundtrack, and I'm harvesting sounds now. I've gotten very interested in what does it sound like where you are right now. If you're standing somewhere and you're feeling agitated and whatever and stuff, what are you hearing? How does sound manifest itself in terms of the amount of stress in this case I'm talking about? Because we easily say, well, where it's noisy and all of that, we're a little more tense and tighter. But there are people who live in situations like that all the time, and they're fine. They're just fine. I was in New York not too long ago, and I was in Brooklyn. I was walking down Broadway in Brooklyn underneath the elevated train, and I was going to a French cafe in Bed-Stuy, which is kind of like opposite ends of Pole. And I'm walking along, and like the trains are coming and the buses are coming, and there's a electric moped shop that's right there. And these mopeds seem to be portable boom boxes, and they're sitting out on the sidewalk and they're blasting salsa music, and you're walking along, and then suddenly, I looked up and I realized at the second level here, people live. And this is their daily, and I was like, kind of like, just.
That's because you weren't used to it.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, do you want to get used to that? Page 32. This goes way back to one of those paths I had back there. This was back 2008, and Beverly and I are celebrating a wedding anniversary, and here we are, and I've made this great discovery about Richard Wright's haiku and all of this. So that's where this one comes from. But creating content from reading haiku by Wright before we come home, and these two do go together. Being here with her just for the length of my life, is there more than this? These two do go together.
Now, that picture, who took the picture?
Who's the woman that knew he was a photographer?
Did you have a tripod?
Yes. That's, oh, okay. Yeah, every flat surface is a potential tripod. Yeah. Yeah.
It just seems so beautifully done, like somebody'd have to stand there and get it just at the right moment, I guess.
I'm looking to see if Beverly's willing to say how many telephone books and whatever and things and whatever. So that went along with that. There's another one. There's one. Let's see. Where is it? Kenna's here. So, Elizabeth, yeah. Here it is. Oh, Deja? Mm-hmm.
When I look at your photographs and your stories, you tell me it's a lot about time, intention, personal stuff, birth, past, future, present. And also, I would ask a question about gender.
Okay, they're all here. So let's, okay, let's, all right. This is, okay, thank you, Deja. Deja goes right where the sores are. So, okay, here's where I want to go. I want to go 54, 55, and 108. Let's see. Let's go 54, 55 first. Hi, Mary. Fifty-five. Preparing your way is what I've worked at hardest. Today's work's watching. Leading, following, shrinking, growing, struggling, shifting roles with time. Watching you being is disturbing my future. Teaching my present. Letting you be is an examination of my experience. 4:50 a.m., I'm awake and knowing why. Letting go must be. This grouping there's so many things I want. I want to say something about old rhythms making new sense in there somewhere. This series of photographs of Kenna watching her mother moving and mimicking her mother's movements, I gotta find it. Because then we go to. See, there was no way I could have planned this. Oh, what is it? What is it? Well, let me finish the kind of the gender. I don't really know what to do with that, Deja, other than we go to 108 and 109. Yeah, I mean, me and Ibrahima. I mean, we're the guys. Yeah, we're the guys. And 108 and 109. He's still alive and sane. Sometimes whatever you know must become enough. So I'm talking about my son-in-law, okay? And I'm talking about dealing with the fact that my son-in-law is no longer present here. And I'm making myself satisfied with what I know. No matter how little it is, how much it is, or whatever it is, he's still alive and sane. And this is not a value statement. This is not a value statement. It is a simple statement of a fact. And if we're able at times to separate judging from simple fact, we can be more at peace, at rest, without tension, as these things exist on both sides of this thing here. I know this because we communicate regularly. This is what I know. I don't know any more than that. So I don't know if that's an answer, but that's a... that's something. What I was trying to find, the mirror of Kenna and her mother's movements, and I was trying to find Yancy and Kenna's movements, and I don't remember what 17 that is. Oh, it's something about just like my whole life has taken somebody. Elizabeth.
I saw that.
Maybe it's. Oh, is that the first?
56, maybe?
56?
Uh-huh.
55? Yes. Okay. Yes. 56. Gosh, they were right there back to back. It was 54, 55, 56. And in 56 is is the other side of the old rhythm making new sense. Okay, I see these all the time. I see compositions that exist in one period of time, and then I see them repeat. And this is an example of that. Like the way I am took my whole life to achieve, hers is taking hers. So here is Kenna passing movement on to her daughter and sharing a language, her language of movement. I see that. I see it all the time. I see it. I see it. I see it. Okay, let's do something about the trees. Page 101. It looks like that. Outside our window, silver maples for Yancey, taller day by day. Black walnuts are gone, plum tree branches bent and broke. Getting all kind of gestures back here. well, okay. Simple, 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 simple. We planted a silver maple tree when Yancey was coming into the world. We planted black walnut trees when Kenna came into the world. Jack planted plum trees when Ibrahima came into the world. And I didn't tend to the plum trees the way the plum trees needed attending to. And they got heavily laden with fruit, and they bent and they broke. And this June, this May, I pruned the plum trees, I've tied the plum trees, and I'm managing the plum trees because Deja, I don't see Deja, because there is a level of responsibility that I have as a grandfather and blah, blah, blah. So that's, fast forward through that. Okay. It's easy to tell the truth, but it's difficult to talk about. Okay, go to page 91. Maybe I can get out of that hole. Sure. Yeah. Come on, Cynthia. Tell me. Okay. Page 91. It's complicated, the number of life's seasons compared to nature's. Okay, we're nearing the end. We're nearing the end. Okay, page 73. Let's see if we can take some bricks off of this. Page 73. It looks like that. It's only real once, every time after a copy. Authentic repeats. Okay, here's one. Here's one I wrote for my dear friend Bill. Page 71. Clarifications are explanations for some, nothing for others. But Seth says he was sent to listen to my question. And this was an encounter I had with a man in a park in Puerto Morelos, Mexico. And I was playing in the park. I was playing in the sand. And he came over and he said, "Do you like playing in the park?" Which I didn't want to answer that question. But, you know, I said, yeah, I enjoy it. And I decided to do something with Seth, I decided, he asked me what was on my mind, and I decided to tell him exactly what was on my mind, because I figured the chances of us crossing paths again were pretty slim, and I, whatever, and stuff. So I told him what was on my mind at that point and everything. And it's the last time I've seen him, last time, nothing, whatever. So I don't know what value it had or anything, but whatever. And maybe page 60 and 61 is a good place to stop. Let's do 61 first. Invisible is not being seen next in line for today's dark roast. And then talking to myself because I always listen to whatever's said. So that's... Ha ha.